Good morning, everyone, and thanks for joining me on Radio Disney AM 1250 KKDZ in Seattle. I'm Dana, and you're listening to Kids Care, your weekly public affairs program where we get the honor of chatting with awesome people in our community who are doing great things for kids and families. How's everybody doing this morning? Well, every once in a while, you meet one of these people that you just sit in the same room with them, and energy just is abound. And just recently, I met a young woman like that, and I just thought her story was so inspiring. I wanted to invite her into the studio today and talk with us today about what she's doing, and how she's doing it, and all the really crazy and fun adventures she's having in her life. And maybe it's if you're a student listening, and you're kind of one of those adventurous types and always wanting to find out creative ways to maybe someday live a lifestyle where you can travel the world and have just crazy adventures and fun adventures and do different kinds of things in your life rather than the 9-to-5 type job, then I think this my guest today is going to inspire you and help you to do just that. Genevieve Hathaway is a photographer. She is a mountain climber, a philanthropist, an entrepreneur. She's fueled by the love of climbing, and she founded a climbing magazine called Alpine Athena. And in 2011, she launched a new project called Gear for Gals in Pakistan, where she was working with a youth outreach program, where she collected mountain climbing gear for women of Pakistan. And if that isn't enough, she's also traveled 26 countries, been on 5 continents, including living in Ireland, Egypt, and by the time this show airs, she will actually be in Australia, living in Australia. So I thought I would invite her in and we could talk today and just kind of find out what she's been up to and how she does it, and just learn a little bit about this kind of adventurous lifestyle that she's chosen to lead. So Genevieve, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Sounds like you're just loving life and doing all kinds of fun stuff. And I want to know, how did it all start with you? What inspired you to lead this adventurous lifestyle where you travel all over the world and do all kinds of neat stuff?
Well, it started back when I was 12. My family and I took a 2-month-long RV and camping trip throughout France and Germany, and I was instantly hooked. You could say I got the travel bug bad then and knew that that's how I wanted to structure my life, involving traveling and kind of exploring other cultures, other places, and mountaineering, rock climbing, ice climbing just sort of grew out of that love for exploring a new area. And so there, that sort of just took me off to the races with the rest of my life.
So at 12 years old, you take a trip and you were hooked. The whole travel bug got you, and you decided that this was going to be something that you're going to do for the rest of your life, travel around.
Pretty much.
So tell us about some of the countries that you've been to.
Well, I lived in Cairo twice, as you mentioned. I've lived in Dublin, Pakistan, obviously, Oman, Dubai. I went ice climbing in South Korea. I've traveled mostly through the Middle East and in Europe and to Peru. And soon we'll be able to add Australia, New Zealand, and Down Under to that list.
Wow. And I you're not going to mind me asking you how old you are.
29.
29. You knew that was coming. So all that before the age of 30.
Mm-hmm.
And how much of that?
I'm hoping to hit 30 countries by 30.
Oh, that's
so
a great goal.
You know, 4 countries to go in the next year.
There you go. Well, you're going to be on an island. By the time this airs, you're going to be in Australia. So what are you going to do?
Well, that'll be one new country.
Okay. So then, right. So you'll have to do some hopping over country.
Some flying
over,
around.
Yeah, flying around and to hit your number 4, or number 30, I mean.
Yeah.
Great. Good goal. So tell me a little bit about some of the things that projects you've been doing. Now, I know that one of the things that you love to do is mountain climbing and rock climbing and ice climbing. And you have been doing this in different countries. And then you started a rock climbing magazine or a mountain climbing magazine. Why start a magazine on top of everything else that you've got going on? Why start a magazine?
There was this vacuum in the climbing world for a resource for female alpinists. There was some things such as Chicks with Picks, which is a phenomenal program that brings women together for rock and ice climbing courses, but also as a community amongst all women. But outside of a few things, there wasn't one place devoting climbing to women, addressing questions, gear, needs. You do see occasional articles in Alpinist and Rock and Ice, but there's still such a male focus, and women climb differently. We have different perspectives. We have different gear needs, and it was this lack of this place, and I thought it would be sort of a great contribution to climbing. I love working with fellow women, both women who are just starting out and seasoned athletes. There's just such a camaraderie about it. And so I thought I would create this online magazine called Alpine Athena to sort of address those needs. And the outdoor industry immediately embraced it, and all the different gear companies just jumped on board. We've got a ton in this area: Outdoor Research, K2, Cascade Design, you know, REI, First Ascent, and Eddie Bauer. The list just goes on and on. Nick Wax, they sponsored me for a while. They were a great support, and just so many different companies here and then other places: Black Diamond, Deuter, Gregory. The list just goes on and on. And they were really excited that there was this place for women to sort of talk and have their needs addressed.
Well, it sounds like you definitely hit something that needed to be, you filled a void, yeah, in the rock climbing industry. And then another thing that you did, which I thought was really inspiring, is you traveled to Pakistan, which is the home of K2 and yep, some other great mountaineering, which, who knew, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you've heard of K2. Most people have heard of that. Which, have you climbed K2?
I have not. That's a pretty big mountain.
Yeah. Make that your next goal. K2 before 35.
Exactly. There you go.
There you go. And how high is K2, by the way? Do you know? We'll find out.
Shorter than Everest.
Yeah.
It's still about 8,000 meters, but it's more technical.
So you were over in Pakistan, mountain climbing, which is pretty big over there.
Yes and no. There's a small community that's building it, but a lot of Western climbers go there to climb.
Okay, so it's mostly tourists or people from other countries going over. But you met a group of people, a group of women who are Pakistan, and they were climbing, and you saw a need that they needed. What were they? Tell me about that whole experience.
Okay, so the Pakistan Youth Outreach, they're an organization that is trying to get more women into mountaineering. There's a number of women there that are climbing currently, but they saw a need to both use it as an avenue to get women more rights, for the Pakistani society to view women as equals, but to also show women that they can really do anything a guy can do, and to build confidence, such a confidence-building endeavor. So one of the directors of that program is Samina Beg, who's one of the top female alpinists there, and she's done a lot of great work. And so they run climbing clinics for women out of this small town up in northern Pakistan called Shimshal. It's 6 days' walk from the China border. It's so remote that until a few years ago, you had to walk for 4 days to get to the nearest town with a road. And
wow,
they just built recently a road, and it takes 2 days to get up there of driving. Super remote, but they run it out of there. It's a very kind of liberal region of Pakistan, so there's a lot of support for getting women involved with climbing. And when they contacted me and said, here's what we're doing, would you write an article about us? I said, why not? Let's take it one step further and get you guys gear, and help you, you know, continue getting further support for your clinics, and also me coming there, bringing the gear there, and meeting them, interviewing them, writing about them. And so that's kind of how it got started.
Wow. So you actually came back, and you collected gear and took it back over there.
About a dozen different gear companies said, we'd love to be on board. Just sent me boxes.
What were they
and
using before that? What were, I mean,
it would
just
be
a rope and just throw
it. Oh, it was atrocious.
I mean, I don't know.
I have pictures on my site, Archeo Adventures, and I encourage people to look at it, because you just look at what they had, and it was heartbreaking.
Did it just take your breath away? Were you just going,
of it was, because you cannot buy female climbing gear in Pakistan. Gear companies, there's just no market for it. They don't sell it.
Right.
And you can't put a woman necessarily in a guy's harness. So they would just tie ropes together. They would tie webbing. They would use, they didn't have, Samana Begg, the director, she had to turn around a couple hundred feet from the summit of a 7,000 meter peak, I think it was, because the weather was too bad and she didn't have a down suit. It was that simple, that she can't do 8,000 meter peaks until she gets a down suit. And for here in America, we take it for granted that we can get those things.
Uh-huh.
And they can't get it even shipped into the country because it's so, you can't just go online and say ship to Pakistan.
Right,
the,
right.
Those things we don't think about don't right, exist
right,
there.
Right.
So even with the money,
ship it
they,
to my,
they can't
to
do
my,
it.
My little remote village that doesn't even have a road.
Exactly.
Doesn't
UPS does not take
yeah,
it there.
Say, don't deliver there? I don't
let
get
alone
it.
Countries. So I thought, right. Well, let's do this. And I mean, they were using, they only had a few crampons. They had very old ice axes. So it was sort of a hodgepodge. They didn't have enough to get a lot of women involved. So all these gear companies, when I talked to them, stepped up, sent me a ton of stuff, and we made it happen.
You know what I think is most inspiring about all of that is the fact that they were doing it anyway,
yeah.
Even though they didn't have it. Just kind of goes to show what lengths people are willing to go to do something that they find that they enjoy doing.
It really was inspiring. And going up and meeting these people and staying with families, they don't have running water. You don't want to ask to take a shower for a whole week because it involves going out and digging a pit and carrying the water in and boiling it.
Oh, wow. I mean,
that's
okay,
how
yeah.
remote.
And you're rock climbing. You are definitely
yes.
in need of a shower
or,
at some point.
In mountaineering or ice climbing, this village starts at 10,000 feet and you're going up to peaks that are 12,000 feet, even higher. Some are technical. They have technical ice climbs out there, rock climbing, and yet they're doing this all with very little infrastructure. You know, they have solar panels to charge generators to run their electricity. And when those batteries run out in the winter, they're done with it. I mean, so that's, but that yet, as you said, they have things that we would say by our standards would be extremely poor, the conditions they're living in, yet that's not stopping them from
doing
what
that they
love and wanting to break down the barriers and wanting to take on the challenge. And they do it with a smile, and it just kind of makes any problems you have look minuscule when you go up there and you live with these people.
Amazing. Now, you mentioned your website. I want to give a shout out
okay.
to your website, and people can go on there and see pictures of the,
yes.
of this experience that you
pictures,
that you had.
Videos,
yeah.
interviews.
Go ahead and give out your website
it's
and let us know.
Archaeoadventures.com, and that's spelled the British way, ARCHAEO. And then adventures, all one word, it's .com.
Okay. And when they go there, are you still collecting gear for the women of Pakistan?
I'm unfortunately not doing it right now.
Okay.
But if somebody listens and says, hey, we'd love to fund this, I will definitely in a heartbeat make a trip back there, bring gear. It's no problem to get the gear because the outdoor industry is so generous in wanting to help different groups climbing,
right.
You know, different groups that have such a compelling story,
sure.
But it's more the funding of getting things over there and the logistics and
right.
that sort of
right.
the hurdle to get past.
Wow. What, and speaking of breaking down barriers, sounds like you've done broken down quite a few. You've started a women's alpine climbing adventure magazine, sounds exciting, called Alpine Athena, and it's online, right?
It is.
Where can people find
it's
that?
It's just alpinathena.com.
Okay, easy enough.
Easy.
I'm sure there's a link on your website as
there
well,
is.
I'm sure. Very fun. Well, of all the places that you've been, is it possible to even narrow down one or two that have kind of been your favorite or the most a rewarding experience? I suppose that the bringing gear to the Pakistani women is probably one, I'm sure. But are there others?
Yes. I studied abroad in Cairo, Egypt. I studied Egyptology for a year. And that was...
Of course you
the
did.
Coolest experience.
What is that?
That was my study abroad in college.
You have the most dynamic experience, world experience at the age of 29 of anybody I've ever met. Of course. course you studied that. And so why was that so unique and so exciting?
It was a chance to go behind the scenes at all these amazing archaeology sites and learn from the top Egyptologists. Everybody you see on TV, on National Geographic, on Discovery, those are my professors. Dr. Salima Ikram, we had, Mark Leonard. We'd go and have class at the pyramids and learn from Mark Leonard. We'd go to the Cairo Museum. And
most people go into their classroom, they're looking for the water fountain. You're looking for, you're looking right at the pyramid and you're going, that's my backdrop.
It was such a growing experience. I was 20 years old and going to Cairo pre-revolution, doing the era of Mubarak. It was a dictatorship. Our dorms were bugged. We were told there are certain things you can't talk about anywhere because the, walls had ears. There were, it was such a security state. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting about living in that dynamic and being a woman in a third world Middle East. Every Middle Eastern country is different, but Cairo, there's unique challenges in Egypt toward Western women. But also traveling throughout the entire country, just me and a group of friends, you grow so much as a person having to navigate on your own this country where it's not dangerous, but things don't always work right. And so you're constantly problem solving.
Do you know the language? I mean, were you
in Egypt? Just a little. Enough to give a taxi driver directions, bargain like an Egyptian haggle real well and pretend I'm an expat, basically. I was living there as an expat. So you learn enough to, we call it survival Arabic, enough to get around.
Sure.
And to sort of hang with the Egyptians.
That's great. And I suppose the cell service and that kind of thing, do you carry a cell phone that is compatible to different countries? And do you have the app that has all the translations on it? Do you ever?
No, I'm old school in terms of technology.
You need to get on that.
I know. That's when I get to Australia. But that's one of the things I had to give up to live my lifestyle.
Right.
Because I couldn't have, I was willing to not have an expensive phone bill. When you live sort of a lifestyle design type of lifestyle where it's not a steady 9-to-5 job. Sometimes you have to pick and choose what you spend on. And
right.
That was the one thing I had to give up.
We talked about that. And I think that's really interesting to kind of maybe give that kind of side to the story. Yeah. Of course, we talk about all the fun travel and adventures and stuff like that and people you meet, which is all exciting. And I encourage everyone who gets a chance to do that. But let's talk about kind of some of the things that you give up and the lifestyle that you lead on the days off, on your days off, let's call them that. your times where you're not traveling, earning money, you're doing things probably a little bit on the cheap or a little bit on the budget side. Let's talk about that.
And I just want to say to anyone that's listening who is thinking that this kind of lifestyle is for them, A, go for it, but B, right away start thinking about what really matters in your life. I mean, actors have to go through the same thing. Photographers early on have to go through the same thing. Anyone that is going to build a lifestyle that isn't based on a guaranteed paycheck right off the bat, it has to go through a period of time, a learning curve, where you have to live very frugally to do the things you want. And you have to pick and choose what you have. I chose to have a really cheap cell phone, a cheap cell phone plan. And instead, because there's internet in so many places, I just pull up my laptop, and we have in Cairo, they have incredible internet. They have these little wireless hotspots that cost you maybe $20 for a couple of months, and you get internet 5 hours from any civilization in the middle of the desert. And so you pull out your laptop and you're up there, and so you find ways to make it work. I sold my car. I would always not have a nice car. Those are the kind of things I gave up. I didn't eat out. When I travel, I go to a grocery store and I buy food. That's kind of the thing I'm willing to give. Other people that do what I do, they're about great meals, so they give something else up. So it's about picking and choosing.
It's about what you've, yeah.
What
that's
you value.
A great little point there that you made, because maybe the food part of it the experience of the food is actually part of what you want. So so you wouldn't give up going out to eat, but you might give up, you know, something else.
Maybe you won't go to the expensive archaeology site that's $85 a day. You know, but I love archaeology, so that's what I spend it on.
Right.
Or maybe you won't go to, I go to some remote places to go climbing that cost quite a bit.
Sure.
We each, because I have a lot of friends that do what I do, and we each structure our trips differently depending on what we love to do and what we sort of value, but we all... We all give up some things because we love something else more.
So you just put your priority
list.
Exactly. It's all about priority. Make your priority list and work down.
And there's a lot of tricks that you learn along the way to save money and still have decent health insurance. You can still do these things, but it involves doing a lot of research and understanding that there is a lot of help actually out there for people who are sort of not having a 9-to-5 job or not making a lot of money.
Right.
And it pays to do the research.
Sure. And I imagine that you probably have some of the information in your magazine and
on my website. I've got a lot of travel tips.
Well, and another bonus of traveling like you're doing, not only are you gaining a lot of experience and a lot of great memories and helping a lot of people, but you're also meeting some really interesting people and learning from them, too.
Yep.
And so one of the things that you were talking about earlier before we came on air was about how when you are traveling you meet lots of other people that are doing exactly the same thing and that kind of thing. So tell me about some of those experiences with, like, meeting other people. I bet it's real fun to kind of all share your stories
and
maybe learn about another country that you never even thought about traveling to or that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. A perfect example of that was I never thought of going to Laos until I went to Cambodia. And then every single traveler I met said, you have to go to Laos because it's the most beautiful southeastern country you've ever been to. And at that point, I thought, man, I got to go.
Right.
Oman was another example. If you're wondering where Oman is, don't worry. I was too. It's on the bottom of Saudi Arabia. And I happened to go there because my ticket to Pakistan dropped me off in Muscat, the capital. And I thought, well, I might as well check it out. Best Middle Eastern country. Absolutely incredible. It looks like it's a bit like the Grand Canyon meets beautiful white sandy beaches meets the warmest people you've ever met. And it's very liberal, big highways, beautiful architecture. It's kind of like the Switzerland of the Middle East, and it's hidden down there, and nobody goes there. But it's got great infrastructure, and I just stumbled upon it because my ticket happened to drop me there. Coolest person I probably, well, I won't say coolest person, but a unique roommate. I've had a lot of unique roommates.
I bet.
But one in particular was, because I stay in hostels, and it's a great way to meet people. I really encourage people to do it when you travel, especially as a solo traveler. As a female solo traveler, you all sort of bond. But my roommate in Beirut, she was the former belly dancing champion of the world. And she had moved to Beirut after running 3 belly dancing companies in Quebec. And she moved to Beirut because they really respect the craft of belly dancing. It's a whole different level. And she can make a lot of money, do incredible choreography, get her, just the art is so respected yet. And she can also make very good money. And so she just did a couple months in Paris and then moved just her whole self and her whole life to Beirut to find a job and got this incredible job there and was living out of this hostel with me.
Sounds
this terrible,
exciting.
Terrible hostel. We were both saving money in Beirut.
Sounds exciting.
It was. I met another woman in Dubai who was putting herself through a commercial pilot school by selling hair. Because there's a shortage of hair for wigs.
Okay, now that's unusual. That's
it
really
is.
Unusual. She's selling her
hair? No, she was a hairdresser, and everyone was coming to her for wigs.
Oh,
for
I
people
see.
Both who have cancer, but also weaves. And she'd happened to go to India, and they have all this extra hair from the temples that they don't know what to do with. So she would buy it and bring it back and sell it, and she's putting herself through pilot school to become a airline pilot and fly 777s around the world.
Crazy. That's
Meet
so
cool. Meet
cool
people. And she was just
this
in Dubai for a few months.
What do you think about Dubai? Because I have a friend who lives over there, and it's pretty modern. I mean, it's actually incredibly modern.
It's the ultimate metropolitan city.
They have an indoor ski resort in Dubai, which I thought was crazy. And my friend went to it and sent a bunch of pictures. And I was like, really? Interesting. I have never seen such a thing. I guess if you live in the desert and you want to ski, that's how you ski.
Yeah. It's especially from the north. If you come from the northwest, it's the strangest thing to see.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Because it's a giant four-speed quad, but you make about two turns down the hill. And it's in this giant mall. And it's bizarre.
It's in a mall?
It's in a giant mall.
Oh, wow. We have ice skating rinks. They have
slopes. It would be like us taking a bunch of pure Sahara desert sand and building some dunes in the Bellevue Square Mall and then crawling through the dunes.
Right.
Dubai is a crazy place. You either love it or you hate it, or you land somewhere between. It's what I love about Dubai. For me, what I love about it is it's a place where anything that can be imagined, they try. There's not this sense of we're all living in a box. If you can imagine it, they're going to go for it. The darker side of that is there's a lot of pollution of the environment, things like that occur because there's no regulation. There's nobody saying, you can't go and destroy that beautiful reef to build this underwater hotel. Things like that. At the same time, they push the boundary. They have the tallest building in the world, the Burj Khalifa. You can stay underwater at this incredible hotel. They have amazing dining. Anyone that loves food, go there. And it's such a unique city in terms of it's just right there in the desert. But it has this beautiful architecture. Anyone that's thinking of going, I actually wrote an article on how you get behind the scenes, how you get off the beaten path. And there's a lot of great small mom-and-pop restaurants that are hidden, that aren't in the guidebooks, that only locals know about. And I wrote this article. It's on my site that links to it, so you can find it there. But little things that make you feel like you're not just in this big glass city.
Great.
But help you kind of go eat fish in the plastic chairs on the beach with the locals who are driving the Ferraris. You know? I mean, that's
right,
the places.
The average income, I think, is $140,000.
Oh, it's incredible. The amount
like
of wealth is mind-blowing.
That's what my friend said, too. So, again, let's give your website out because I'd love to encourage everybody who is looking for an adventure, wanting to see, you know, what kinds of things you've been up to, can go to your website and look at it and see how you're doing and what you've been up to.
You can follow me in Australia.
There you go.
Get some travel tips.
Okay, so go ahead and give the website.
So it's archaeoadventures.com, and that's ARCHAEO Adventures. It's spelled the British way.
Okay, perfect. Again, my guest is Genevieve Hathaway, just an inspiring young lady who's doing a lot of fun things with her life in terms of travel and experience and along the way helping other people by bringing gear to rock climbing women in Pakistan, which is a very high need. A lot of women are climbing over there with some gear that's probably pretty questionable.
Yeah.
And so being able to take over some very safe gear over there and let them do what they love, because you're doing what you love. And words of inspiration that you might be able to leave with some of our listeners who might be that 12-year-old Genevieve when they were listening, they're listening to their 12-year-old Genevieve wanting an adventure in their lifetime.
I know it sounds a little cheesy, but really do follow your dreams because it's absolutely possible to structure your lifestyle, we call it lifestyle design, to include whatever you want it to be. Whether you love to travel, whether you love the outdoors and wanted to just rock climb or hike or guide tours, there are always ways to make a living doing this. And if you love it, that translates to anybody you work with and really just getting outside of the box. Find the people who've done it first. One of my favorite things is mentorship. Finding someone who's older, who's walked that road, and saying, how'd you do it? Because there are people doing it every single day. So there's no reason, if you're listening and you're thinking, oh, I'm 15 or I'm 18, I'm graduating college and I'd love to just do this, but everyone around me says, you got to get a job. And you may need to get a job for a year to fund, something else down the road, but it's about
keeping that
dream alive and learning from other people who are who are out there doing exactly what you want to do. And they're out there, I guarantee you. No matter what it is that you want to do, someone has walked that road first, and they would love to help you not make all the mistakes they made. Because you do. It's a learning process. You make a lot of mistakes, but you get better as you do it.
Great. Well, Genevieve, thank you so very much for coming in today. It was great speaking with you today.
Well, thank you guys for having me. It's been a blast.
And by the time this airs, you're going to be off in Australia.
I know.
I'm so jealous. That'll be so much fun. Well, you'll have to stop back in and let us know, especially after you turn 30. I want to find out. I want to update, find out if you actually
the pressure's
made
on. Yeah, hit my 30 countries.
Hit your 30 countries before the age of 30. Great. All right. Well, have a great rest of your day.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. From all of us here at Radio Disney, I'm Dana, wishing you a wonderful rest of your morning. Bye-bye.